You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Welcome to another episode of RPS Presents. Today we turn our attention to Dive. The North American shoegazers return to Barcelona to present their latest album, A Frog in Boiling Water. An album with a recurring theme protesting late-stage capitalism, which was augmented with a potent live show with tailor-made visuals of fake advertisements in which the band sell themselves out to the highest bidder, among other pieces of social political satire. We managed to get all four band members, Zachary Cole Smith, Andrew Bailey, Colin Caulfield, and Ben Newman, to sit on the steps of the backstage terrace of the Apollo Theater to talk about the album, inner band dynamics, longevity, and the power that goes with building cathedrals of sound.
How does it feel to be back in Spain, Dive?
Lovely. We love Spain. It's one of the greatest places in the world.
Because, you know, when you tour so many times around the world and stuff, when you go back to places, you know, you've been to Barcelona a few times. The city loves you very much. It understands Dive just perfectly. When you go back, do you make sense of places that you're stopping off on tour? Like, do they leave a mark on you, or is it kind of like going through the motions?
We've had like beautiful experiences in Barcelona. We've played Primavera Festival a bunch of times, and had like a week off, and I was here, my wife was pregnant, and it was like this beautiful week that we all had, and we all decided Barcelona's the best city in the world, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then when you come here and like, you know, we're right like a block away from the hotel we were staying at, and everything just like floods back instantly. It's kind of like it's kind of a trip. Yeah. You just walk out of the door and it's just like all your memories just like hit you at once.
Yeah. I noticed that tonight you have one of the Kinsella family supporting you. Were you guys big fans of Cap and Jazz, American football?
I'm a big Joan of Arc fan and all of Tim's bands, really. I've been a huge fan since I was like, I hate saying this because it makes me bummed out when people say this to us, but like since I was in like middle school. But yeah, huge influence on me. So it's really cool to play with Tim and his wife.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see the good news today? My Bloody Valentine have announced their first show since 2018 in Ireland. Does that strike a chord with you? Do you get excited when a band that is always kind of mentioned anytime Dive comes up? Are you happy to see that they're surviving their own ways of making things?
Yeah, like it happens to us too, where like, you know, there's smaller bands that are in this kind of like shoegaze zeitgeist thing and they're doing well. And then it, you know, the hope is that it's good for us, you know, that there are people kind of injecting life into this little like scene and expanding the boundaries of it. So then for it to kind of rise to the top, to the greatest of all shoegaze bands, I think that's great.
Yeah.
I wonder if Kevin Shields saw The Cure release their long-awaited record and he was like, all right, fine, here I come.
It's amazing how lots of these bands were infamous for taking so long in following up a successful album. And now they're all, you know, they're all like rushing up and connecting with Generation Z. Just this one last thing on shoegaze. Like whenever I like look at other genres, I think of how they evolve and stuff. And you guys are in between, and the fact that, you know, shoegaze was incredibly huge in the 90s. It was something fresh. And then there's this new Gen Z appeal for it. And there's bands, young kids rediscovering the bands from the 90s. They love Dive, obviously, because they were in college when you guys were out with Oisin and stuff. Or you know what I mean? Like
middle school,
exactly. How do you think the genre or the style has evolved? Like, has there been technology that has made it boost? Is there something that, you know, as artisans, as practitioners of it, do you think that there's been much of a step forward since the My Bloody Valentine slow dive days?
I think there's more accessibility to like electronic music adjacent production tools now, because MBV was like experimenting with that, and they were the band of that crop that really like dug into kind of like experimental techniques. But it was like they were so on the forefront of it that it felt like they just happened to put in the time to get good at it. And now I feel like people are able to make that kind of music in their bedroom. And so that kind of influence is really filtered in like effortlessly into the making of the genre.
I also think there's like a lot of space to expand it. You know, I think that, you know, when a band perfects something like that a long time ago, and then there was like a period of time where people were kind of trying to like recreate it, there's really strict rules, you know? And now seeing younger bands like breaking those rules or expanding on what's possible, suddenly there's all this new life breathed into it, and people can kind of pick up where one artist left off and expand it. So I think just the umbrella is getting bigger of like what shoegaze music is or something.
But I always wonder from a technical standpoint, like especially when you're like an established band like yourselves, and you can start being ambitious with equipment. You were talking about, okay, now technology has afforded the possibility for any kid in Pakistan to like make an album that sounds as amazing as an Aphex Twin album. But when it comes to bands on tour, making sure that that sounds incredibly loud every night, but crisp and stuff, do you think we're there, or do you think you were saying something about that there's room for improvement or innovation maybe?
I think live is like a different thing. You know, making music at home, you are in control of your environment. Making music in a live setting, you lose a lot of control of the environment. And, you know, you need to like hire a sound engineer to mix you out front because you know, it's not something that you can do while playing at the same time. So it becomes more collaborative. And along with that comes, you know, people who you have to pay their fee to have them do it. And, you know, it's more difficult to use kind of like digital instruments and digital effects live. So live, I think it's different. I think it is... like the more money you have to invest into the show, the bigger your shows are, the more budget you have to step it up. So that's what we've kind of been putting our money into, is like making sure that we have people who make the show sound good, because we can't do it ourselves. We have control over the instruments we're playing and the pedals and stuff, but we don't have control of the entire sound, you know, that yeah. That's like a team effort.
You know, because I've been going to gigs since middle school, I guess. And I kind of feel that it's always kind of the same, like in the sense that I go to a venue, there's a PA, bands sound good. Some other bands might not have the money for a good sound engineer and it doesn't sound as good or whatever. But, or even in festivals, it's like, okay, but none of the, and this isn't on the bands, this is the promoters and the techs. Like, do you feel that there could be a dream scenario that is attainable where a surround experience, like George Lucas came up with THX, right? And all that, and how to make the experience more, the cinematic experience more immersive. As live musicians, this is your trade. Do you, like, is there things that you think, man, I should be the James Cameron of this? Like, I should like force venues to, I don't know, like for my show, I need to have this, I don't know, this spherical system or something. Is that something that you ever dream about?
No.
I think that stuff like that kind of has to be like site specific and is more kind of like a museum style art installation, because there's kind of like established standards and norms at venues so that everyone can plug in and do the same thing. So maybe if we, you know, we're bringing our own rig everywhere, like our own PA and stuff, but I don't think it's really necessary for our style of music. But I mean, in theory, it would be cool, but it's not really what we do.
I kind of like how it's not that way, where like every band has to use the same like tools to make art out of and in the same exact space. And it was a dude from Talking Heads, David Byrne, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. David Byrne talked about it in his book, how when he was writing all the Talking Heads songs, he was writing it for CBGBs. And I feel like when we're like imagining these songs live, we're picturing these types of clubs and the next step up. So as like, you know, we need to be making music that works, not in like the DIY spots that we used to play in, but some like the actual rooms that we're in. And it's cool. It's like a structure that confines you and like makes you more creative and shit like that. Like what can we do with these restrictions? You know, like we can put up fake satire commercials and like trip everybody out or like, you know, stuff like that.
But there's something about the Sonics the sonic dynamics with Dive, like the cathedral of sound, as they used to speak about, you know, those shoegaze bands of the 90s, no? Like this incredible experience for a listener and for the musicians playing it to create, to construct this tower of sound. Does space matter in this way? Like, do you have that part of ambition where like, it would be so awesome to play like a Colosseum, like Pink Floyd or you know, that kind of thing. Like obviously you have the festival stages.
It would be cool to have done that, but it would be a nightmare to actually do it. Cause the music that we, or our stage show right now. Yeah. Yeah. It would just be like the most expensive thing ever. And it would take so long to figure out because we built our show with this like canvas in mind. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Yeah, like Bailey was talking about kind of like the great equalizer. You know, venues are like these spaces where you have just a certain set of tools. You have the PA, there's lights and whatever. And so all the like innovations have to be kind of creative and come down to your content. And like they showcase the songwriting. And part of the way our songs sound the way they do, partially it's because our sound engineer is good, but partially it's because we wrote songs that utilize all the frequency spectrum of that's available, so that there's like it's a full sound going in, you know, and then it's easier to work with or whatever. Like I think working within limitations is for me always like the most inspiring way to work, you know, rather than like reinvent the wheel every time.
Mm-hmm. So A Frog in Boiling Water it's been a band album, shall we say, but do you guys still start songs the same way? Does it all start with sketches in your head and acoustic, or is it always like plug in and let's start generating an energy?
Frog was kind of like not like sitting down in a room and just like jamming or something. There have been a couple songs in the past that have started that way, but Frog was kind of like, you know, we started it during COVID, so we're all like apart from each other, working in the computer and then kind of sending ideas back and forth, maybe meeting up and like playing them or whatever. But it was kind of just like us as a collective, like interfacing with the song, like on the screen. Mm. And yeah, they come from, you know, whoever sends a good song, you know, it's, they can start wherever and they can end however. It's just, we were kind of like learning what we were doing as we were doing it.
So is a good outcome of the pandemic the fact that you now know how to operate solo simultaneously and just bring ideas together to make them work? Or does this band work best when the four of you are under the same roof with the equipment plugged in?
Kind of depends on like the phase of the song. There's like Cole was saying, they can kind of start any different kind of way, like solo style. But there's a certain point where we kind of all need to get together and like refine the ideas and kind of like bounce ideas off each other. But yeah, we kind of take a lot of time making songs. It's pretty rare that one of us will bring a song that's like finished to the other three of us. Hmm. So it's both. It starts usually as an individual and then kind of evolves into like a full band thing.
Now the themes on this album, I love how you've captured the zeitgeist of, you know, we're all kind of world weary, where there's a general lack of trust in our governments, in the price of rents in any city. We just had an incredible demonstration on Saturday, you know, about the rent is being too damn high here in Barcelona. It's a global phenomenon. Were you aware that you were making an album that 50 years in down the line, people will be able to say, look, an album that captured what the 2020s were was A Frog in Boiling Water? Or was it just like you finished the album and it's like, oh shit, there's a theme here?
That implies that people 50 years from now will be able to listen to digital music.
Well, yeah, but once, there will be vinyl, analog.
It'll all melt.
I think all four of us were really happy to be making something that was just true to the way that we see and experience the world and kind of was relevant to the topics that just we discuss on our own, independent of making music. And especially now, it's like so gratifying to be playing these shows and feel like we tapped into something that is like real and relevant rather than just making like another record with like songs that might be really good but aren't necessarily about anything in particular. And it's an intimidating thing to do in the moment, especially because it feels like a non-commercial concept kind of, because it's easier to just fall into a trap of being like, we need to make like a single that'll do well. But with this album, it was more about like, let's try to capture something that is real and like bigger than us and more outward looking, which has been really nice. Especially now that things are like accelerating, feels like people are responding more emotionally to the music because it's speaking to things that they're experiencing in their own lives too.
Yeah. I know. I feel that there's a general mid-tempo pace all throughout the record. Was that a deliberate thing? Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Dive has had like multiple lives, you know, and I think early on we would play shows and we would play really, really fucking fast and kind of as like this disguise or like a distraction from maybe other shortcomings in our like playing or the songs or whatever. And I think that like part of for us like growing up, not just like getting older, but also kind of trying to like mature as artists was to like focus on the song and not really just not just give you like a candy, you know, like the fast, I think I'm doing a bad job describing it, but yeah, it was deliberate, I think, to like tilt the show and tilt the band more towards like song first, rather than like it being just like energetic or, you know, whatever.
We made Deceiver too. We like intentionally tried to like reinvent the band because we were like coming back to it and we made something that felt really different. And I think with this record, we vaguely talked about wanting to make something that was a bit more like comprehensive with all of the sounds that we've used in the past and feelings and everything. And there we referenced Ocean a little bit, not for like specific musical ideas, but more for the kind of feeling you get when you listen to that record where it just kind of like washes over you. Like you press play and you're just in the world and it's just... So I think that the tempo of, or like the kind of speed of the record kind of came from that. Like we wanted all the songs to feed off each other and complement each other more than anything.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. I like it. Forgive me, but it's like a cool stoner album in the good sense of the word. Like it's a great album to chill out to and stuff. Where do you ideally picture people listening to this album? Like, do you worry about that stuff as recording artists? Like, you know how some people is like, oh, you know, this will be great for the gym playlist and stuff. And it's like, I hate to speak of music in those terms, but nowadays,
I mean, that's the reality. You know, like so much of the kind of like algorithmic recommendation machine of these like tech companies that people listen to music on is like that it kind of becomes distilled to the lowest common denominator. And it's not really about who made it or what it's about. It's just kind of like gym vibes or whatever. But that said, I think once you make music, it's like completely out of your control, how people consume it, how people interpret it, whatever. I don't know, but I haven't really thought about like where to listen to it. Headphones.
Yeah, headphones. That's just what I was going to say. It's like a headphones record, which is cool because you can wear headphones, you know, in your bed, stoned, or at the gym. Mm-hmm. It kind of, you can wear headphones anywhere almost.
Except in line for customs.
I'm just happy for anyone to be listening to the music. I feel like there's no wrong way to do it. I think if someone played the record on their like laptop speakers or out of their phone and they were like, this record sounds bad, it would be like, well, maybe you should go the extra mile. But other than that, I feel like if people are listening, it's a positive thing.
When I picture people listening to music, because I listen to music usually when I'm walking around in public, and it's when I'm like, oh man, this place feels like this emotion or vibe or whatever, and then I pick a song that like is a good example of that vibe. And so I picture people listening to this record like walking around shopping malls or like stuff like that, you know, like dying capitalism areas.
I remember when we finished the record.
Sorry, everywhere.
Bailey texted the group and was like, I just listened to the album walking around we did a good job. It was like his test.
Yeah. Does that part become tedious when you have to listen to your own recorded album to figure out track listing or, you know, check the copies that they're okay and stuff? Are you about like set and forget? It's like, okay, I don't want to have to listen to it ever again unless I'm playing it.
No. Oh. We had like a lot of, there's a lot of time in between when we recorded it and when we were like sequencing it. And then when we were listening back to check the like vinyl to make sure there's no like fuck ups in the press or whatever. So it was kind of like, for me, like when we did that listening party, when the record was finished and I was sitting there listening to it with like 25 other people or something, it felt like I was hearing it for the first time. It was like, because I think we all got so burnt out on the record and making it and stuff that there were probably points in the thing where I was like, I just don't care anymore. And then hearing it again with fresh ears when we're like sequencing it and hearing it when it's finished, all of a sudden it was like this whole new thing and you can hear the songs for what they are and appreciate little decisions that were made. And it's kind of like what I was talking about when you open the door in Barcelona in a city you've been in before and the whole process, the whole experience you had comes flooding back. It was kind of like that, listening to the record. You see all these moments at once. So I don't know, I liked listening back to it when it was done.
Well, this band has survived many ups and downs and in interpersonal things that you've had to overcome. What's the secret formula to keep you guys together and especially continue doing it when maybe in 50 years' time this has all melted and we're all burnt and can't walk the earth?
Just communication.
Lack of other options. Lack of other options.
I mean, there's a certain reality where like this is our job, you know. It's both the art we make and our like passion, but it's also our job. So there's certain realities where like, yeah, we continue to do it because it's what we do. But I think beyond that, yeah, just like us talking. Any time in our past where we're not really like hanging out or like communicating, like things just break down. And then as soon as we just like talk, we're like, oh, it's all good. We just have to do this.
Yeah, it's really cool. Actually, I think about this sometimes, how like most people, you know, you have friends and you kind of lose touch, or like for whatever reason, your life goes this way and you go that way. And very few people are like forced to remain friends with somebody for like extended periods of time, but we are. And it's like cool because you like, yeah, exactly. You have to like reach these like other levels that like most people don't encounter, I think, because I never did otherwise, you know, but like, yeah, it's crazy.
I think there's also, or the way that I always think of it is just like stubbornness, like against our better judgment sometimes of just like,
yep,
you know, sometimes it feels like you're walking around and the world's melting and it's just like, no, I'm not stopping. Like, we're just going to fucking keep going. And I feel like there's been a lot of times where it's just like, we could have very easily stopped, but I think all of us, we just like really want to do this. We love making music, so we're just like not giving up.
Yep. There's a cool dynamic too where it's like it requires the four of us to work hard and be on a good page with each other, but the band also feels much bigger than us, and like it's like this like ship that we're on, and like we could get off of it but the ship would still be there, and it feels better to be on it together and like continue. And like Andrew said, like just a really bizarre way to experience life, you know? And I feel like there's so many like challenges that we're presented with that allow for like real growth as like humans. And I feel like all four of us are like better people because of all the ups and downs that we've gone through in the band.
It's because you're a rare breed. You don't see many bands sticking together anymore. Everyone ends up going off on a solo project, or, you know, somebody's like, ah, especially when, you know, there's a midlife point in, you know, I know you've become a parent, so have I not so long ago, so I understand. Thank you, same thing. Congratulations. How old is your kid?
Two.
Two? Wow, you're in the weeds. Yeah. Mine are three and one. So we're in the tunnels. And it's like, I don't want to do anything extra because it's like, I'm so exhausted and tired all the time in a happy way. But it's like, people are like, hey, we should get together and do whatever, create it. And I was like, fuck it. No, I just want to stay home and catch up. How do you find the energy to like go on tour and be, you know, be in a band, which requires so much psychological and physical strength?
Me and Colin were just talking about this, where like you kind of compartmentalize your life and you're like, it was me and you. Mm-hmm. We talked about you kind of are like two people at the same time, and you have kind of like your domestic, like personal life. And then there's like the creative side. So I'll like, you know, put my son to bed and like kiss him goodnight and then go in the garage and make a song that's called like Death to America or something, you know, and like they do balance each other, and they, you know, they inform each other. Like, I think my wife being pregnant was like, really informed some of the kind of like big, like thinking that led to some of the content on Frog or whatever. But, you split it out a little bit because you can live as like your normal life is like the guy in Dive or something. It's just, but also like Bailey saying, or somebody, it's like, it's our livelihood. So we have like a better shot succeeding at this than we do at anything else. So it seems worth just like, you know, and the stakes are high. We have families, we have, you know, bills. But it seems like this is our best path towards, financial independence. So we keep going.
Yeah. It's the best case scenario. You're financially successful with an artistic project.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, I know it sounds financially successful. Always you imagine a limousine and the cover right. of Forbes. But I mean that, you know, this is
almost pay our rent.
Yeah, you're on the double decker bus thing. I haven't seen.
Yeah. We pay for that.
You pay for. I know. So you can afford to pay for a double decker. You know, sleeper.
Kind of. It's not like a luxury spend. Having the double-decker bus is because we wanted to invest in the show to make the show better for people. In order to do that, like I was saying earlier, we need a staff. We need crew. We need front of house. We need, somebody to tune all the guitars for the tuning so that it's not boring between songs tuning. We have somebody selling merch. We have somebody doing the lights for the audience. And in order to, you know, if we bring all those people on tour and we have hotel rooms, it's more expensive. So it is the like budget option to tour on the bus. It's just, it doesn't show like, in a way it's financial success that the shows are making money, but it's all that money is invested back into the show. Yeah. And the bus is proof of that. Just to like, cause people have kind of brought the same idea to us. Like, man, it must be amazing. You're touring in a bus. And it's like, well, we're kind of like camping, and it's just a reality of having this many people, on tour with us. You know, we have a tour manager, we have all these people whose job it is to hold the tour together. And that's not necessarily for our benefit. That's for the benefit of the people who are attending the show.
I think that, having more and more we talk about, I think about it this way a lot, that the band is basically like a small business that the four of us have. And small businesses are notorious for not making any money for a long time. Even if you go to like a restaurant and the restaurant's packed and you went up to the owner, you're like, congrats, it's going great. He might be like, I want to kill myself right now. Like, and I think there's like a myth of success in the music world. And I think that people don't truly understand how expensive it is. And it's getting more expensive all the time to tour. And so there's this like feeling that it's like always right around the corner. But at the same time, we are in a much better position than we were years ago. And like, we feel grateful to be where we are now. Cause I mean, starting now as a band and going on the road must be like really daunting.
And tour is really like our only possibility for making real money because of, you know, the institutions that have gutted the way of making money through recorded music. You know, Spotify and all the streaming services pay fractions of a cent for plays. The money is not, there's no money to be made really anywhere. in music for a band like us. So touring is the thing, but there's this double-edged sword of like, we have to make the show good in order to justify people wanting to come. See, so like any business, you spend most of the money investing back in the business. And it's kind of this constant thing, like Colin said, like there's just this dangling carrot just out of reach that like, that represents like financial success for us personally. I think the band has financial success, but that money just goes back into supporting the band and growing it. You know, making albums is extremely expensive. Touring is extremely expensive. And these are all, we pay for all that, you know.
From an external point of view, because I'm always reading about, especially the British bands with the whole Brexit deal, they're like not finding touring a financially viable. They can't. They're in debt even when a tour has gone well and they're sold out shows, and they're still in debt. And you hear all this.
It's really common.
It's really common. But the way that you guys are reinvesting, because that means that you have the vision of a future plan. What's fueled that confidence in the future?
It's not. I mean. It's not confidence per se. It's more just like all our eggs are in this basket, this dive basket. And so, like I said, if we, this is our best shot for success, we have to give it our all. So, you know, if we want to have a financially viable thing, we have to play music festivals. If we want to be invited to play music festivals, we have to go around the world showing people the show is good. And it's just kind of on the off chance that we get booked on a festival that pays us well. Yeah. Or like we get booked on, you know, it's like investment in a chance for something bigger, you know, to hit the next, to take a step up the ladder or something. But we aren't confident it'll happen. It's just we want it to happen so bad that we're willing to invest in it in on the off chance that it does. And then at least we did our part to make it happen. And so even if it doesn't happen, we can't say, well, it wasn't, you know, it's not because of something we did wrong. We did our part. It just didn't work.
Well,
I think there's also like...
Am I being like so negative?
No. You're being realistic. It's easy to get bogged down by the kind of realities of having a band, and there's certain like financial restrictions and limitations that are imposed on you. But just to answer the question, maybe a less realistic way, it's also like pride in the band. And like a feeling that we are a good band. And there's like you said, there aren't that many bands anymore. And like enough people tell us that, where I feel like a real sense of pride and like a belief in doing it, because it's like an exception to how things are done now. And I feel like carrying that torch and trying to like trudge through the storm of kind of like the modern status quo of like everything being like algorithm based and TikTok and everything, like, for us, like, we love bands from the past that are similar to us. And there's something to be said about kind of just like committing your life to that ideal, which is like powerful.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I mean, I have tons more questions, but I've had you here for half an hour already. I want to let you chill out. This is a great neighborhood to hang out before a show. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit with us in Radio Primavera Sound. We love you guys. And I'm really excited that I finally get to see you in the Apollo.
Thanks. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.